That's going to be a journey to cut.
Yeah, have fun with that.
Oh my gosh, so good.
Hello, and welcome to Snark Squad Pod, a media podcast full of friendship, feelings, and snark. My name is Marines.
I'm Nicole Sweeney.
And today we are joined by Matthew Gatos.
Hello, I'm Matthew Gatos. You might also know me as one of the co-hosts on Cooler Than Homework with these two people as well. And I am also a producer on the YouTube channels Animal Wonders and Journey to the Microcosmos.
And Matt is joining us today to help us finish our experience with the current Star Wars trilogy. So Matt is the Star Wars friend to help guide us through this journey.
I'm here to answer all the weird lingering questions you might have.
It is now my job to give the plot synopsis, but in the interest of full disclosure, I got back from the theater like 15 minutes ago, so I did not prepare at all to give this plot synopsis. So we begin with Kylo Ren locating the still alive Emperor Palpatine, who is basically like, LOL, you killed Snoke. He was my puppet. I was really trying to like lure you in all the time. And I'm still here. And like, I want to let you take over everything. But first, you have to go kill Rey. And Rey is not who you think she is. But we don't get to learn who she actually is yet. We jump from there to Finn, Poe, and Chewie narrowly escaping as they get information from a First Order spy. And that information is basically that Palpatine is back. While this is going on, Rey is not going on the missions because she is still doing Jedi training. Poe's like kind of mad about this because he's like, you're our best fighter. What the fuck are you doing? Like, come be on the missions with us. Once everybody realizes that Palpatine is back, Rey remembers that she read a thing in Luke's notes, and she is pretty sure she knows how to find Palpatine. So the gang is back together. They're going on a big old mission to go find Palpatine. Luke's notes lead them to another desert planet where they find Lando Calrissian, who was like, yes, I know exactly what you're talking about because Luke and I were looking for it together. And we found this Jedi hunter ship, but we couldn't find the artifact. And Rey is like, no, I'm not leaving. We're going to keep looking. Kylo Ren does the like weird Jedi mind meld magic thing and like connects with Rey and is able to figure out where she is. The gang now again, like narrowly escapes capture. They end up sinking in like sinking pits and but rather than like dying in the sinking pits, on the other side of the sinking pit is this underground tunnel situation. And that is where the Jedi hunter and his clue wound up. So they find it. They escape, except Chewie gets captured and Rey has this whole showdown with Kylo Ren in which she blows up one of the ships that is escaping, which she believes has Chewie on it. The clue that they found from the Jedi Hunter is a dagger that has a bunch of inscriptions on it, and it's written in Sith text that C-3PO can read, but he is programmed to not read Sith translations out loud. So he knows exactly what it says, but he is incapable of sharing that information. So Poe says that he knows a guy who can help them get the information extracted from C-3PO's memory. So they go to a planet called Kijimi to have that happen. Once again, Kylo Ren tracks them down. Rey can sense that Chewie is alive and on Ren's ship. So they go to rescue Chewie, and Rey and Kylo Ren have another like big showdown moment in which Kylo Ren reveals that Rey isn't actually nobody. She's really the granddaughter of Emperor Palpatine, and her parents hid her on Jakku. Jakku, is that the planet where she was? Yes.
Yep.
Did I? Oh, yay. I got one. Her parents left her on Jakku to hide her, basically. And Palpatine wanted her basically because she is, you know, the heir to his power and he felt threatened by her. Meanwhile, it is revealed that General Hux was the spy inside the First Order and he helps the others escape. And they appear on the Millennium Falcon and help Rey sort of flee. So while they were on Kijimi, they were able to get the information back from C-3PO's memory, but they did have to like wipe his memory in order to do it. Basically, the dagger reveals the location of a wayfinder, and then that wayfinder is the thing that will lead the gang to Palpatine. So they head to the planet that the dagger directs them to, and there's this big scary ocean, and there's the like remains of a basically destroyed Death Star in the middle of the big scary ocean, and then Rey holds up the dagger, and the dagger basically like points out where on the Death Star this wayfinder is. Rey goes through the scary ocean to the Death Star, and she finds this wayfinder, but then Kylo Ren shows up and they fight. And during all of this, Leia can like sense what's happening, I guess. And so she uses like the last of her like force power to basically just say his name, to say like Ben, and then she dies. And as this is happening, Rey stabs Kylo Ren in the stomach, but then right after she stabs him, she also feels that Leia just died. So she heals him, and then she takes a ship and runs away. Rey runs back to the planet where Luke was hiding out, because she's like, I am also going to go hide out because I don't want to become evil. So she destroys Kylo Ren's ship, and she's about to also destroy her lightsaber. And then ghost Luke appears and is like, hey, don't do that. And then tells her that she has to not be afraid of herself, and that she's the only one who can save the Jedi. And Luke has Leia's lightsaber, and he's like, here, take this. You're going to take two lightsabers to go get Palpatine. Also, in the like under the ocean or whatever is my ship, so don't worry, you have a ship too. And also in the wreckage of Kylo Ren's ship is the other wayfinder, because there were two of them. While all of this is happening, Han Solo's ghost also shows up to be like, Kylo Ren, remember how you are my son Ben? And then Kylo Ren is like, I do remember that. And that's all that happens there. And so Rey heads to the place where Palpatine is, and she sends a signal back to the like resistance base, and they're like, what the fuck? This is Luke's ship. This is weird. And then Finn is like, no, that's Rey. And so then they all follow follow where Rey is going, basically, so that they can all go to where Palpatine is going. Rey finds Palpatine, and Palpatine is like, oh, I never wanted you dead. I wanted you to be so mad that you would kill me. And then all of my like Sith energy or whatever would go into you. I don't really understand this, but it's fine. And Rey is like, no, I won't hate you, even though you are evil, but I won't hate you and I won't kill you because that's what you want. And so she doesn't. And Kylo Ren shows up during all of this, and I don't know, they try to make a stand against Palpatine, and then Palpatine is like, oh cool, you're like a dyad, you have like the two of you is super powerful, so I'm gonna suck all of your power, and then that will rejuvenate me. And so he does that, and then it seems like he's winning the day. He does this crazy lightning thing to try to destroy all the ships, all the resistance ships that are in the sky. But then Rey calls on all the Jedi, all the past Jedi, and they give her the strength to stand up, and she summons both of the two lightsabers and defeats Palpatine. But then she collapses and appears to die after like saving the day. And then Kylo Ren is suddenly strong enough to stand up too. And so he comes, and then he uses force magic to heal her. And then he like for real dies and like ghosts away in the way that Luke did in the previous movie. So while all of this sort of like force driven thing between Palpatine, Kylo Ren, and Rey is happening, there's also like a larger massive battle between the like Sith forces and then all these the resistance forces, and like a bunch of ships show up from all over the galaxy to also fight. So like that battle is happening and then resolves, and the resistance destroys the remainder of Palpatine's like fleet, armada, whatever. We cut to the rebels celebrating back at their base, and then Rey goes off alone to this like desert planet where she wraps up the two Skywalker lightsabers, Luke and Leia's, and uses the force to make them like sink into the sand. And then, you know, we see her that she has another lightsaber, and this random local woman appears to show us her weird alien camel and asks Rey what her name is. And she looks off into the distance and sees the ghosts of Luke and Leia, and she's like, my name is Rey Skywalker. And then that is the end of this movie.
I think we have talked about this in different ways, especially in the previous episodes, but for the sake of clarity and for putting it all out there, I want to start with talking a little bit about our each of our previous history with Star Wars. We know that Matt is our Star Wars friend, so we'll start there. Matt, have you always been a Star Wars fan? Tell us a little bit about your history with this franchise.
The short answer is yes. I've always been a fan. As far back as I can remember, we owned the VHS tapes and I would watch them repeatedly. I specifically remember in 1997, I was like 9 or 10, and the special editions were starting to come out, which meant like a new line of toys was coming out. So before then, there were toys you could get, but 96, 97 was like this huge push of like bringing Star Wars back into the mainstream, because there hadn't been a movie in like 14 years that had come out. So around 97, they were like, here's all the toys are back and we're re-releasing the movies with some changes. We swear these will be the last changes ever. That was a lie. And thankfully at the time, my parents took me to the theater to see, I think, at least one of them when they re-released them in the theaters. And it turned out, I don't know if other people knew at the time. I know I didn't know at the time. The reason they were doing this huge push in 97 to like get Star Wars back into like pop culture was because they planned on making some more starting in 1999, which is when the prequels started to come out. And I was a fan of Star Wars even through the prequels. I think I was mostly in like junior high and high school when they came out. So I went and saw them and I bought a lot of the toys, and I don't really have strong memories of disliking them or liking them. I think I liked Star Wars, and this is kind of where you'll see that I fall in general, like with all these movies, is that I like Star Wars, period. Like, I like the world. I like the characters. I like the way that these worlds are constructed. The stories and plots and TV shows and movies and stuff are sort of secondary to me, like lower than the world that it all exists in. So for me, like, I can watch a dumb little like 4-minute Lego Star Wars short on Disney Plus and be like, yay, Star Wars. And like, it doesn't always have to be like a 3-hour long movie with all of this plot.
You have a certain level of automatic buy-in, like because it's Star Wars, that you're like, yes, I'm here for this.
Yes. Yeah. Like, it, pretty much if something exists in the Star Wars world, I am going to want to consume it, even if it's like, if people say, yeah, it's terrible, though. I'm like, yeah, but I'm still going to watch it. Like, I am somebody who has watched the Star Wars holiday special multiple times in my life. And this is admittedly one of the worst pieces of media that exists in the world. And I have watched it multiple times. And part of me still like gets defensive about it, even though I know it's terrible, of like, but there's this part's not so bad because it's Star Wars.
This is my trash, okay?
Yeah, it's very specifically my trash. And yeah, so going into all of this, like, I'm still a huge Star Wars fan. The plan is that next year when I'm getting married, that at my wedding reception, there will be lightsabers hanging on the wall for part of it. I spent, I'm going to say 8 hours in Galaxy's Edge when I was at Disneyland.
Can confirm, I entered Galaxy's Edge with Matt, and then we all said, okay, bye Matt, we're gonna go to the rest of Disneyland.
And I said, have a good time, I'll be here when you need me. So yeah, I think that probably paints a pretty clear picture of where I stand on Star Wars.
We have talked in the previous episodes about our complete lack of background. This is also apparent in the plot synopsis that I just gave, where I was excited that I remembered Jakku, which isn't even like old Star Wars. That's just like from the Force Awakens. And I was like, but that's literally all I have seen are the movies in the current trilogy, which I have now seen all of. I've only seen The Last Jedi once. I have now seen The Rise of Skywalker once. And I watched The Force Awakens, I think also only once, maybe twice.
Yeah, so same for me. I had plans of rewatching the first two in this trilogy, but then The Witcher came out this weekend and I was like, that's better. So those are kind of my feelings on Star Wars. Like, I enjoyed the first two. I had different, like, you know, issues with them, and they're obviously not things that I was like, man, I really want to get to that again. But I pretty much was ambivalent going into Rise of Skywalker, which was actually my first Star Wars movie in the theater ever. I'm pretty sure. I watched the other two in my living room, which I remember talking about, like seeing the scroll at the beginning, both on the little screen, both times. So this is the first time seeing it on the big screen, which Nicole told me had a certain majesty to it, which I can now confirm. that's where I am. Three movies and only one of them in theater.
There is like an energy to watching that opening crawl, and specifically like as soon as the Lucasfilm logo comes up and you hear like the crowd sort of like hush and they're all preparing for it and like they're all anticipating that just like large logo to burst onto the screen, like you can kind of just feel a weird energy in the theater happen.
For sure. And it happened in my theater. I think that people were super excited, and there's something even nostalgic about, I guess, the opening and the you know, the crawl or whatnot. Even not having been a Star Wars fan, that is so deeply rooted in pop culture. And I don't know, I just felt like you definitely got the sense that like, okay, we're all here to witness this like very large thing, for better or for worse, whether you liked it or not. Like Star Wars is a, like a massive entity. And so just getting to experience that with everybody in a timely manner for the first time was cool. We're going to back it up now that we have that on the table and ask the real first question that we always ask. Did you like this movie?
I loved it. I think I posted on Instagram last night, I freaking loved it. And that was my like attitude coming out of it. Like I literally, while watching this movie, I don't think anything's ever felt more like a popcorn movie to me, as like I am watching this with my bag of popcorn and just like nomming down on it the whole time. Just like, yes, give me more of this movie. Yes, I like that. Yes, yes, I'm happy with every decision being made, aside from a few that we'll get to. But most of the decisions that were made in this movie, I was so happy with, and just the experience of it was, for me, great. I understand that for a lot of other people, not so great. But for me personally, I went into this trying to be as like pure as possible. I didn't read any reviews. I tried to avoid any like tweets about it or anything after it came out. And yeah, no, I had a great time.
My feelings are mixed. And again, I got out of the theater like 15 minutes before we started recording this episode. I also did make a point of not reading any reviews before going into this. So I have only my own feelings and what comes out of this conversation to sort of guide me. There were parts about this movie that I really enjoyed. There were also a number of things that like really, really deeply frustrated me. And that I think that my general feeling about it is like, eh, like that was fine. I am not particularly eager to watch it again. I did feel that like that sense after watching The Last Jedi. Like The Last Jedi, I realized now I actually did see it twice because I watched it in the theater and then I watched it again for the podcast episode. But like that was a movie that I was excited to watch again. This I'm kind of like that was fine. That was an experience that I had and I don't regret it, but I'm also not seeking to have it again.
I kind of did the opposite as you guys. So in a group chat with my friends, they were talking about like spoilers on Twitter and muting words and how even with muted words, they still got spoiled. And so that kind of led to me thinking about and having, I don't know, just being like, I don't know, stop using Twitter if you don't want to get spoiled. So that's generally always my feeling because I'm not like a big spoiler person. And also these are like social media and communal spaces. But that whole conversation was like, I don't know why it sparked it in me to want to look up spoilers. So I looked up spoilers before I went to the theater. And I think that it was actually an okay thing for me to have done because I more or less like just kind of skimmed through and knew what the bones of the story was going to be. And so it was almost like I prepared myself, and I also like mentally prepared myself for the worst. I had been dreading portions of this just because of, you know, the capital D discourse going on. And because from like movie one, knowing nothing about Star Wars, the one thing that I had heard about was Reylo. And it was from that first episode where we covered it. I was like, I'm prepared to hate this. So now here's the culmination. And I had like all of these feelings, but I think that I built it up so much in my head that the feeling I had when the movie was over was like, that was fine. Like I was expecting so much worse. So that was fine. It had some moments that I really loved. It had some things that made me laugh. It had some things that I got super emotional watching. There were some choices that like you guys have expressed that didn't sit well with me. And I think I will watch these movies again. I'm in no rush to do it, but I can see myself somewhere down the line wanting to see them all in closer proximity to really kind of understand the whole story and to like parse out my feelings with this story in particular, and not necessarily just, you know, because it is Star Wars, but because it is a trilogy, I guess. So understanding how that whole story worked together. So that's where I am.
So that is actually my one of my like peak frustrations, is that it felt in a lot of ways like this movie was going out of its way to like cancel the movie before it. And that was annoying. Like that was really frustrating. I realized that there is a larger discourse around this that I know basically nothing about. It's kind of amazing to me how like in one year and out the other, most Star Wars conversations have gone from, like, I've been aware that people have been yelling about this for weeks, but like not processing. Like I didn't have enough hooks in my brain for me to actually be processing all the things that people were saying. And so I don't know any of the kind of like background or story or whatever on any of that, but literally just sitting in the theater, it was like, it is clear that this movie is undermining the one before it in a way that was really frustrating, especially because I really liked The Last Jedi. I really enjoyed that movie. And so I was annoyed by the many places in which this movie felt like it was saying Star Wars, but not that one, not the one you liked. I was like, well, okay, well, fuck you.
Yeah, I will agree that I think there's a handful of times that it does that for sure, of like calling out things. There's only a couple that really sort of frustrated or offended me. The most offensive to me is when Rey goes to throw her lightsaber and Luke's ghost catches it and is like, a Jedi's weapon deserves respect. Because at the beginning of The Last Jedi, Rey hands the lightsaber over to Luke and he just tosses it aside. And that was a thing that some fans had a problem with, was that he wouldn't just throw his lightsaber. And so to have Luke now come out and say that a Jedi's weapon deserves respect, I'm like, oh, that's, you should, might as well just like look straight into the camera and say like, fuck you, Rian Johnson.
Yes, totally.
That the whole Luke and his whole attitude was very, very different. And then, I mean, they also paid a little bit of lip service to it when he was like, one line where he's like, I was wrong. But he had this almost like, you know, world weary, like battle weary feel to him in the second movie that was almost entirely gone this time. It was all bright smiles and cheeriness as a ghost, which, you know, seems like an even worse place to me, but that's just me. So that was like one that I was annoyed with. The thing that really, really stood out to me was Kelly Marie Tran's complete erasure from this movie. Like the fact that they, not only was she such a side character, but the way that they kept pointing it out. Uh-huh. It was like, she's like, oh, I have to stay here and do research. And then we never see her again for the next chunk of the movie. And then, okay, the kiss between her and Finn in The Last Jedi was like something that also got like a lot of backlash. And then here they're just like always like patting each other. It's like, hey, friend. And like, I don't know. It was like things like that that I was just like, really not happy with, especially in regards to her character. And then the other one that was just like a personal thing, I don't know if it really has like that big of a deal or an issue outside of my personal preference, is the fact that Rey is not nobody from nowhere, but she's like somebody here now. I was like, boo. I wanted her to be nobody.
We talked about this quite a bit in the Last Jedi episode, that like that was a storytelling beat that I really enjoyed. And again, I cannot contextualize that properly in the larger universe of Star Wars stuff, but like the idea that, you know, it's not all fated and you know, being born into power. And I don't fundamentally object to the idea of not making her nobody from nowhere. It also felt like the movie was doubling down on that idea in one of my favorite moments, like a moment that did actually elicit real emotion from me, which there was very little of in this movie. I did not get emotional about much of anything, but the one thing that like affected me the most was the shot of all the other like ships appearing in the sky. Like when Poe looks up and you just see the sky full of ships, there is this idea that the movie keeps paying lip service to about this, like the resistance being about, you know, like groups of people, and that like they, part of how they win is that they convince you that you're alone, but you're not. And like, look at this sky full of ships, and like, we're going to do this together. And then immediately cutting to, no, you can't do this together. The one man with all the power is going to stop this. And then the one girl who is the heir to all the power is the only one who can stop him. And like, I don't know, that was frustrating. The combination of one, not allowing Rey to be nobody from nowhere, and then two, not allowing the like actual collective to save the day, and like, and saying that it's only like this girl who is heir to the power is the only person who can do it. It's only people who are born into power who have any capacity to like really do things. I don't know. Just something about that, like that messaging bugged me and like was not pleasant for me to watch, because again, it was undermining this thing that I loved so much about the last movie. And I didn't love that.
Well, I think part of that in The Last Jedi, something that I really liked and I know a lot of other people liked, is that Rian Johnson kind of used that movie and Rey's storyline, but also the little kids on in Canto Bight as like examples of anyone can have the Force, and that like it doesn't just need to be the Skywalkers and the Palpatines of the world. Like there are other people out there who have this power. And honestly, I knew this was never going to happen, but like after Last Jedi, when Rey takes like the Jedi texts from the island and goes off, I was like, what if Rise of Skywalker was just like Rey's Jedi school, and she just like sets up a school somewhere on an island and is just like, all right, I'm gonna train a bunch of kids to be Jedis. There's no villain. It's just a very pleasant experience. I'm gonna set up a school and be a very good teacher. Come on, kids.
Well, it had that moment on the desert planet Coachella where she's watching the alien babies like at story time, and they were so adorable. And so there are like a few moments where she has those like times of like watching either children or the innocent or like the bystanders, I guess, where you could almost feel that fanfic that you're writing really coming together of her going back and finding some of these people and putting them into her Jedi school. I would love that.
She's just like, you know what? I'm going to stay behind. You guys go have fun. I'm going to stay here and train all these little guys into being future Jedis. Have fun. Uh-huh. So I re-listened to the episodes where you both talked about Force Awakens and Last Jedi, and was listening to what you both were sort of either worried about or thinking might happen in future movies. And one of the things that you talked about dreading both were the Reylo, which we do get a little bit of, but also the redemption arc in general for Kylo. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to kind of know how both of you felt about Ben Solo becoming Ben Solo.
You know, I think I'm never going to be here for a redemption story for somebody who does a lot of genocides. Like, I just.
Right.
Correct. And this movie did a thing that you kind of have to do in order to give a redemption story to a dude who did a bunch of genocides, which is to kind of like not acknowledge them and like pretend they didn't happen and to sort of pass them off onto other people and you know, defer that responsibility. So like, that's annoying. My bigger problem with Kylo Ren is honestly not really even about Kylo Ren, and it's more about fan communities and the way in which fan communities tend to like fawn over hot white men who behave badly. And it's not a thing that I'm into. And it's like there is a very long list of hot white men who do terrible things that fangirls make excuses for. And I hate it. Like I hate those conversations. I hate that discourse. I'm cool with the idea of a redemption arc and with the idea of people growing and changing, but like, you should be mindful of where that baseline is. And like, this man did a lot of murders, first of all. So like, there's that. I am just in general not invested in the idea of a Kylo Ren redemption story. However, all of that being said, I will say that my one sort of like caveat to that, the kind of redemption story that I am most inclined to accept, you know, again, like I have all these priors with the idea of Kylo Ren that make it tricky for me, but really, really terrible person dies doing the right thing is like the one form of redemption that I'm like, okay, yeah, that's fine. I accept that, like, his one good act, basically, like, he gave his life doing the one good thing that he did. And that's fine. Like, it's fine.
Like, he didn't end up celebrating with the rebels at the end. So,
correct.
Right.
That is the thing. That is the thing that would have infuriated me. Like, so I come away from it not like I don't care, but I'm also not mad about it. I guess is really where I'm going with that. I could have done without the Reylo kiss, but like, whatever. That was like one of a thousand things about this movie that was just so blatantly fan servicey that, like, what, I don't care. That's fine. Do it. I don't care. It didn't really upset me. I wasn't really rooting for it. I am deeply ambivalent about Ben Solo's little journey in this movie.
So, as I mentioned before, I think that I built it up so much in my head that in reality, it was fine. It was not as bad as I was expecting it to be. And I agree that having him die at the end, you know, perfect for people who never wanted to Reylo to happen, and great for people who did, because they can then be like, see, we told you he was going to be redeemed, and then also ignore all of the genocide that he did.
Correct.
So fine. You know, you can have that. My thing, I think what annoyed me the most, and, you know, it was on display throughout the better portion of this movie, is that, like, the idea of, like, Rey, our hero, and Kylo Ren together, and the fact that for the majority of this movie, he is, again, like, emotionally abusing her, and just the way that he talks to her, the way that he is trying to also get her onto the side of genocide, like, all of their interactions, those were never, to me, in any way, something to cheer on, or something to, I don't know, promote in any way. So the fact that we can look past all of that because, you know, they fight back to back, or, you know, he can find her wherever she is. It's like telepathic stalking. We love it, apparently. I don't know. All of that is just
right.
So
yes,
not
like
my...
that is what's happening. Yes.
Yes, absolutely. And all of it is so not my jam. I don't think it's a particularly complex or, like, ooh, shiny new story to tell either. And, you know, it ended the way that it ended, and I guess it will be fine. And like I said, whoever hated it can continue to hate it, and whoever liked it, I'm sure, will be able to continue to like it. The thing that I think is the most pressing thing here is that I've seen Kylo Ren referred to as like a boy, just a boy who messes things up, and I'm like, oh, it's so
no.
much more than that. Primarily
no.
because he is a man. Secondly, because he's not just like messing things up, like trying real hard and not getting it right. Like, he's actively murdering people, and also he's like not
Poe
great
in the Last Jedi was trying real hard and messing things up.
Correct.
Like that is an example of a character who tries real hard. But then, like, and people die. But, you know, that was never his intention. Like, it was his intention. He was trying
yes.
to have the people die, and then the people die. Like,
his goal was to get as much power as possible by killing as many people as possible to make him more powerful.
Correct.
That's, like, the most evil thing that I can think of.
Yes.
I saw on my timeline, like, a status that was like, we love a bad boy who just hex things up or something like that. Like, and I was just like...
I die.
Mute is what I did. Goodbye. Goodbye forever.
Yeah, I've never been like a big Reylo person in general, because similar feelings of that, like, I am okay with Ben Solo being sort of redeemed. And as you said, Nicole, like, especially with him dying after his one good act, like, it's sort of
right.
it mirrors Darth Vader from the original trilogy. Spoiler alert for you two.
Nobody else.
Yes. Nobody else. But for you two, that is a spoiler that Darth Vader goes out.
Well, wait, didn't... I mean, Palpatine tells us that, right?
That's true. Yeah, he does bring that up. So he spoiled it,
yeah.
Not me.
Palpatine did it, not you.
But I do... I guess I understand the Reylo thing from a certain point of view, because part of me watches Kylo and Rey, and I'm looking at those two, and I'm like, I love love these two characters near each other. I love them interacting with each other. I love that they are the balance, that the whole series is about balance and like one side rising up to match the other. And we see that very clearly illustrated in this film where Rey grabs a ship out of the sky, which is something we don't, you know, see every day. And then Kylo's like, yeah, well, I could do that too. Watch. And like he grabs it and they sort of like arm wrestle over this ship that has a bunch of stormtroopers just hanging out like, what's going on inside? And then Rey lightnings it to death. But I like that those two would become teammates eventually. I liked the way all of that happened. Like literally up until the moment they kissed, I was like, yes, this is going exactly how I would want a redemption arc for him to go. And they kissed and I was like, damn it. Why? You could have just not done that part. And I would have liked it so much more.
So the thing is, the genocides never would have been cool with them being teammates. But also, the kiss is the point for so many people. Again, it's a thing that is never going to be my jam. But it is this idea of like, here is this man who is fucking evil, okay? But like, the thing that will save him is his love for this girl, and like,
I think. I also would have liked the idea of like the, like, if it had been more of like a push and pull between good and evil between two of them, if I ever felt that Rey was attracted to the dark side in any way beyond Kylo Ren. If she had her own like separate feelings about like, I have this darkness inside of me and he's like, I have this light inside of me, and it was like a push and pull between them, but it literally was him force stalking her into his head and going, you're so dark. And then she's like, well, am I? That's not quite the same thing to me. You know what I mean? Like that felt more malicious and weird.
And because we never see the thought originating from her. We only the concerns about her darkness originating from him.
And that is so manipulative and abusive and disgusting to me that it never truly felt like the push and pull of the dark and the light side.
Yeah.
And then also just the idea, and I get it. It's like an older Star Wars thing, whole idea about balance. But, you know, Rey kind of as herself, I really like Rey, and I freaking, you know, there were so many moments that I was cheering for her and I was enjoying watching her grow in her power. There were some of her like, I'll do this on my own, that I was like, OK, calm down, girl, in this movie. But in general, we love to see a powerful queen. I love it. But the idea that her power is growing and it's tied back to this boy, like in relation to that. And that relationship was also just kind of like tainted it for me a little bit. This movie definitely has not changed my underlying ideas about Reylo. I am curious, kind of tying it to Ben Solo. And I think that was another thing that the movie wanted you to do, was like kind of dissociate Kylo Ren and Ben Solo. And like almost like they're almost two different people. So anyways, kind of tying it back to him, he sees obviously his dad, and there are a lot of other cameos, I guess, and people who pop up from previous movies that I have no personal feelings or attachment to. But how was that for you, Matt? And like, were there any people that you were super excited to see? Is there anything that Nicole and I maybe didn't pick up on that you were excited about?
I'll say that might be more of a question for you two of like, do you have questions for me of why is that important? But for me, I think there were moments that going into this film, I didn't actually love the idea of bringing back the Emperor because it felt kind of, I don't know, like you had run out of ideas as creative writers. To bring him back and to paint him as like the big bad of this whole trilogy feels kind of weird because his presence isn't felt in the other movies. It's not even like hinted at. And from a big, like grand scheme of things, it does make sense because he is literally the big bad from movie episode one throughout all nine now. So I guess I see where they're coming from, but it also didn't necessarily, when I heard, hey, the Emperor's coming back, I wasn't like, yes, I can't wait to see how they do that. I was more like, oh God, how are they going to do that? And so I was actually kind of happy they didn't over explain it. But as far as sort of cameos and stuff go, I think Lando Calrissian coming back makes sense. He was like one of the main ones from the original who had not yet come back. So to bring him back in to bring him back in a way that not only like served the greater story, but is also a little nod to Return of the Jedi when he pops up in that movie. He is wearing a similar disguise to what he's wearing in this film. So you don't really see who he is at first, but you can kind of figure it out. And so I like that. Some of the cameos that didn't necessarily do as much for me was during the big scene where Rey is pulling like the power of all of the Jedi, of all of the dead ones from all the past. And you hear all their voices like encouraging her to like, get up, fight. You can do this. These are your final steps. There's like 12 people in there that are voices from everyone from Ewan McGregor to Liam Neeson to Yoda to Mace Windu, played by Samuel L. Jackson, all the way down to actors from the animated series like Rebels and Clone Wars and other people from the prequels that have never been in an actual like Star Wars live action film. So I think that's cool that they brought them in to do that sort of thing because it ties the universe together. But it also didn't necessarily pack the emotional punch for me that I'm sure it was meant to, or that it probably did for other people.
The thing that I will say about all of this is, and again, I recognize that part of what's happening here is that I am not part of the like target audience for this, I guess, because I don't have that background. But it was definitely the kind of movie that felt like it was constantly winking at you to say like, hey, remember this? Remember this? And and in this way that I don't know. Like, I think about all the ways that in the first two movies, it was kind of exciting to be like, I don't actually remember this, but I do know what this is. Like, I know what's going on. And right. and I felt that way in both The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi. Whereas here, it was always like, do you see it? Do you see it? And I'm like, yes, I see it. Okay. Like, I don't know. And wound up feeling like very few things had time to land emotionally because it was so, look at this and look at this in this way that I like was not for me.
The only thing for me that really like emotionally landed and was like a really strong moment for me is when Chewbacca finds out that Leia died and he gets immensely sad and like breaks down in this way that you haven't seen from him. The closest you have is in The Force Awakens when Han Solo dies. He gets extremely angry and is just like, I'm gonna kill all you guys and starts like shooting everyone. But to see Chewbacca get like sad and fall to his knees and like crying, like had my eyes watering. And I was like, don't do this to me, Chewbacca.
Speaking of Chewie, I do want to circle back to a question that I had for you, Matt.
Yeah.
So I, again, just got out of the theater. I saw like an earlier showing of it. There were definitely a lot of like families and kids in this audience. So there were a fair number of, I don't know, audible reactions to things. And for the most part, all of them were things that I was like, yes, that was shocking. Like the gasps at she's Palpatine's granddaughter. And then my whole theater gasped and like that kind of thing. There was one moment, which is when Chewie gets that medal. People seemed like really excited about it in this way that I was like, there's clearly some additional significance that I'm missing to the medal. So can you please explain what was happening there?
Yes. And this is actually one of my, out of all the fan servicey moments, I can forgive a lot of fan servicey moments. This one's a one that's like, it's a little dumb, but I get it. So
my theater clapped. The people were clapping.
And that's why they did it. They knew that this is one of those things of sort of similar to the Raylo sort of thing of like, are you giving in to what the internet wants? Like you're reading the comments and you're like, just do what they want because they'll be happy. This didn't feel like a natural story moment at all. So to explain, go back to A New Hope, the first movie, the original movie. The end of that movie, they blow up the first Death Star, not the one that's in this movie, a different one. They blow that up, and then it goes to a scene after that where they are basically like an awards ceremony celebrating the conquering heroes, where a bunch of the rebel like army is lined up, and at the front is the stage where Han Solo, Luke, Chewbacca, Princess Leia, they're all standing up there like, look at, here are the heroes of the rebellion. And Luke and Han get these gold medals and Chewbacca does not have one. And so for literally like decades, people have been like, why the hell didn't you give Chewbacca a medal? He's just as important. And so This is like the ultimate, like, here, we finally gave him his medal. And, and it's just that thing of like, it's purely for the audience out there who is like, Chewbacca never got a medal at the end of A New Hope. And it's like, here, he gets his freaking medal.
You know, where that moment fits and like where it hits in the movie, I am totally fine with them inserting a like basically weird meta joke. Like that's really what that is.
Yes.
That's fine. But also this is hilarious. Thank you for this context.
You are welcome. That's what I'm here for, is this supplying me bigger context to why things were in this movie. Because there is a lot that I think probably like passed by people who have not seen the original trilogy or sometimes even the prequels. Another one that's in this movie that didn't really get like a big audible gasp, but was one of those small moments where I was like, oh, hey, cool, it's him, is during like the end battle when Lando is flying the Millennium Falcon. There's a guy in like the gunner seat firing the guns in the Millennium Falcon who's just an old British man, if you're you two watching this movie.
Yep, that's correct.
To those of us who saw the old trilogy, his character's name is Wedge Antilles, and he is somebody who was sort of like Luke's right-hand man throughout all the space battles. Like he was there at the first Death Star, he was there at the second Death Star, he was just kind of always one of the other fighter pilots who was always around. And so seeing him pop up as one of those sort of unexpected, because he wasn't a main character, but a nice little addition to the story.
There weren't a lot of reactions in my theater, but I was sitting next to a guy. I went by myself, so whatever. I ended up sitting next to this random guy, and he was having a lot of audible reactions. Like, he kept saying, like, oh, shit, and, like, every time something happened, and, like, damn, like, that kind of thing. And then the movie ended, and he goes, well, that was shit. And he just spent the whole 2 hours, like, having audible, like... like laughing, crying, like exclaiming, and then it ended and he was like, well, that was shit. And I was like, oh, come on. You're a Twitter guy. You're such a Twitter guy right now.
I just watched you go through an emotional journey, sir. Excuse me.
Well, that's a bigger point I want to talk about a little bit, at least for me. I went into this movie feeling very defensive even before I watched it, because when like the initial previews came out from the premiere, there was already people who decided like, all right, this is the worst movie ever. Ruined Star Wars. They did it, everyone. My childhood's gone. And because of like those early reactions from people who had not yet seen the movie, I have, at least for now, temporarily deleted my like Twitter app off my phone and logged out on all my browsers so that I'm not on Twitter to see anybody talking about Star Wars, because I wanted to go in and sort of, I don't know, I have friends who went in with the complete opposite mentality of, they saw the reviews and they're like, oh, this is going to suck. Like, this movie's going to be the worst. Whereas I was going in being like, you know what? I am going to go in assuming I will like this movie. I might not like it. I might love it. Who knows? But I'm going to go in at least hoping that I will enjoy this film, and not just like setting the bar super low to begin with. And I was happy coming out of it that I didn't necessarily feel like I had to defend anything that was indefensible. Like, I purely enjoyed the movie going experience. And when it was over, I had the thought of like, all right, remember that you love this. And don't listen to the people who will try to convince you that you didn't, because a lot of that happened after The Last Jedi. And I remember going to see Last Jedi in theaters and really just enjoying it, loving it, being like, this is one of my favorite Star Wars movies ever. And then going home and watching like YouTube reviews and reading Twitter things about it. And I'm like, oh, you know what? That's right. Maybe I didn't like that movie as much as I thought I did. And I'm like, no, don't let those people take that away from you. And so I'm kind of like, not sure when I'm going to decide to go back on Twitter, because I know the moment I say I liked this film on Twitter, people are going to jump in and say like, no, I don't think you did. It was bad.
Yeah, I cannot relate with this specific movie, but I do understand that, like, that phenomenon. We have talked about this a couple times recently with Charlie's Angels is the biggest one that comes to mind. That was something that, like, we knew that people were mad about it. And so I went into the theater primed in its favor. Like, just because I knew that people were pissed off, I was automatically, fairly or not, it had bonus points with me before it even started, because there was a piece of me that was like, fuck you, I'm here to have a good time. Like, I just want to go have fun. Let me have fun. And similarly, like, I walked out of the theater with a similar feeling of like, I wouldn't look at that movie and be like, wow, that movie was fucking amazing, but I had a good time. And like, I had fun. I had the experience that I wanted to have in the theater. So I definitely understand that, even if I don't necessarily share that sentiment for this movie.
And I think that like that sort of baggage that you bring to any movie or story, like, that exists. And it just is so, it's so much baggage for Star Wars anything. It's right. Now been like 40 plus years since this whole thing started. And, you know, even people like Nicole and I, who are not, don't have the experience with the previous movies, like, we talked about having like pop culture touchstones, and that is even baggage that we're bringing to this. And I also, like, it's weird because there are things about, I guess, the discourse in the fandom, which, you know, the fandom is now like so many different things that it's weird to talk about it like as a fandom. But, you know, things that I very much don't agree with, like the whole Reylo thing. But then, you know, you get the stuff like running Kelly Marie Tran off Twitter because, you know, racism or whatever. And so you do get defensive in a way that it's like, well, yeah, I'm going to support, you know, what has been the most diverse cast of Star Wars ever. And, you know, I'm going to support this story about a girl with a heck of a lot of power, and I love it, and that kind of thing. So I have had like very mixed baggage that I'm bringing in. It right. serves to create a very weird experience, I think. And that's why I land on the side of like having enjoyed moments of it a lot, but then still, like, I don't know, feeling mixed reactions. Good for you, Matt, for like disconnecting yourself from all of that and just like having the pure experience that you wanted. And yeah, you let me know if anybody tries to convince you that you did not like this movie.
I will
go at them. Yeah,
yes, we'll come to defend your honor. I will say that all of that is part of why I love doing this thing. Like, I don't know, those conversations on Twitter are going to be what they're going to be. And I think this is somewhat similar to the things Amari was saying at the beginning about her feeling about spoilers. Like, Twitter is what it is. It has the kinds of conversations that it has. And I more often than not, when people are complaining about the way that discourse happens on Twitter, there's a piece of me that's like, is the problem everybody else, or is it something about you and the way you are engaging with that space? You know, like, is it that you maybe need to do something a little bit different? And like, for me, I don't know, I can, most of the discourse that happens on Twitter, I take with a grain of salt, because it is not designed for nuance. Part of why I value this project so much is that I think that I hope that in all of the conversations that we have, we try to be like very upfront about all of the ways that we do have baggage when we go to a piece of media. Like, there is no, you know, there is no blank slate. So like that you're always going to carry that into your experience with the thing. And so, and like that experience is going to be personal. It is part of why we always lead with, did you like it? And not like, is this good? Yes or no?
Right.
Like, that's not the question. I'm not interested in asking you that question. Like, did you like it? Like, what were your feelings? Because like, that to me is the more interesting and, quite frankly, honest way to talk about it.
Yeah, and Nicole only tells me I'm wrong. She doesn't tell guests that
that's
they're
true.
Wrong,
that's so. Correct.
Well, and it's also like with the Twitter discourse, not only has it been refreshing to be off of it for about a week or so now, but it's been a good reminder of that Twitter is not real life in many ways, that like the people on Twitter are not the people everywhere else. And like your friends, even, I don't know, I find that my friends even behave differently on Twitter than they do if I'm having a face-to-face conversation with them. So it's nice to not necessarily view my friends through the Twitter filter as well sometimes.
Yeah.
So like having the removal from that discourse for a little while has been really nice, and sort of like, obviously not being able to remove all the baggage from going into the film, but being able to remove at least that sort of section of the fandom that I just can't even begin to understand, and not letting them taint my experience of it is kind of like where I'm at right now. And even talking to people after the movie about it, the people who hated it, who like literally said, I didn't like a single thing about that movie. I look at them. And I'm like, huh, weird. I liked it. I'm good. like that's a weird feeling. I can't relate.
I feel like we have spent so much of this talking about all the things that I hated. And there are a couple other things that I did really enjoy that we haven't talked about yet, which, again, are like stemming from my ambivalence towards Star Wars in general. But I really the two things that stood out the most to me as things that I loved were Carrie Russell's entire existence in this movie.
I was going to ask you about like, that as a fan of the Americans. What did you think?
Yeah. So I mean, I fucking love Carrie Russell. So there's like that.
I do too.
But also her character was great. Like, I don't know. And like that whole sequence on that planet, like the surgeon guy was cool. Like just, I don't know, that whole bit on that planet was great. That little bit of backstory for Poe was cool. Carrie Russell was great. I loved everything about Carrie Russell being in this movie. I even enjoyed her little, like, the head nod exchange that she had with Poe at the end of the movie. All of it. I mean, actually, I will say I would have rather seen them, like, get together. Yes. I think the two of them deserved to make out, but it's fine.
Maybe the helmet is really hard to take off. Maybe it's just really hard to get that thing out of the way. On the note of the Zori Bliss stuff, I do think there's a little bit of context that's helpful to sort of understand Finn's reaction to what he finds out about Poe's past life and like why he's so sort of like taken aback with like Poe's life. And part of that is because they reveal that he was a spice runner, which in Star Wars terms is pretty much like a drug dealer. like a drug runner. So he's finding out that he had a very strong like criminal past.
I guess that it was like a criminal thing because of the way that Poe react. But I don't know. I guess I was thinking more of like smuggling kind of thing.
Yeah,
that's same. Kind of what I assumed. Yeah,
same.
I mean, I think the two definitely overlap because the Han Solo has been a spice runner at times, and he is also known as a smuggler. So I think there is definitely some overlap in the smuggling and spice running worlds. But yeah, Babu Frick, the little droid surgeon, is adorable.
I love him. And he was so cute.
He's so good. And I just want like a toy of him, of some like life size Babu Frick, just like on my desk that probably talks because his lines were some of my favorite things.
Yes, yes. He's got to talk. It's not like it's not enough to. It would be cute without it, but like his dialogue was really essential to how cute and good his character was.
Even if it's just the line when C-3PO reboots and he's like, "I'm C-3PO," and he's like, "I'm Babu Frick." Like, hey, nice to meet you.
Yeah, I just want to push a button and have him say that. Like, that's,
yeah, just, yeah, I'm Babu Frick.
Great toy.
Yeah.
The other, this is much smaller, but the other appearance that I enjoyed, and this is like purely, again, because it's an actress who I love, but Jodie Comer as Rey's mom made my heart really happy. I was delighted to see her. Also, like, as soon as she appeared, I was like, yes, I do buy that her and Daisy Ridley are related. Like, that's like independent of me wanting to see Jodie Comer in more things. I also am like, yeah, that's like a solid casting move.
We talked about like audible reactions in the theater, but when Carrie Russell showed up, you know, you can't see her face at first, but she's talking and I'm like, I know this person, I know this actress. I had no idea she was going to be in this movie. And I'm like, who is this? I know this person. And it wasn't until she flipped her visor up and I saw Carrie Russell's eyes that I was the one who went in the theater. Like nobody else. And probably everybody is like, what's that weirdo reacting at? I'm like, Carrie Russell. That's amazing.
I remember hearing that she was going to be in this movie, like back when it was first announced. Nick, I think, is the one who was like, did you hear that Carrie Russell is going to be in the Star Wars movie? And I'm like, yes, that's the thing I'm most excited about. So I clocked it pretty quick just because I like knew that she was going to be in it.
I think that Matt mentioned one of my favorite moments, which was Chewie's reaction to Leia's death. I don't know why those like howls of pain really got me in the heart. I have no real like
connection to either of those characters outside of these movies. But I don't know, just when he like falls on the floor and is crying, I felt that pretty deeply.
I also really liked seeing his again, which would not have meant much to either of you, but I really like seeing his reaction when he saw Lando, because those two hung out for a while, like in two of the movies. And so this is him getting to see an old friend that he probably never thought he'd ever see again. So, yeah, I think, I don't know, there's like little special moments, especially with Chewie and with C-3PO, that you get in this film that harken back to a lot of the things that you would only really know if you watch the original trilogy. But I think they do a really good job of sort of like reminding you of some of those things. I think some people would obviously say it's a bit too fan servicey and like beating you over the head with it, but it didn't bother me for some reason. I don't know.
I also liked, like, at the end when they did, like, the three-way hug between Finn, Poe, and Rey.
Yeah,
yeah. Like, that moment was like, oh, okay, I did eventually get invested in these characters. Like, I was worried about them. I was rooting for them, and seeing them just all come together at that moment after they had won, like, I was like, okay, movie, you got me here. Like,
you got me.
Yeah, I was actually, I got bummed on the way to the theater because I had the sad realization of like, oh, I'm not gonna see Rey, Finn, and Poe anymore. Like, we're done with these characters. And I just like had not considered that until going to see the movie. That was like, oh wait, no, I've been looking forward to more stories with these characters, and now we're done with them.
This is it, right?
Well, you never know. You could be taking your child to the theater one day, and here comes Rey, Finn, or Poe, and you'll be the one going in the theater.
If this movie is any indication, they can die and they'll still bring out 19 ghosts of characters. So don't worry, Matt.
I wanted to ask you both a question since you have not seen the original trilogy. The end scene where Rey goes to a desert planet, as you said in your synopsis, and buries the lightsabers there, did that mean anything to you?
Yes, I recognize it because I have indeed watched the first 20 minutes of the first movie before I quit it. So I immediately like recognized it. I was like, oh, I've been here before, one time before I quit a movie. So if I'm remembering correctly, it's Luke Skywalker's where we first meet him. So I guess his home or wherever he started that movie. Is that right?
Yeah, no, I have no idea. That's I can neither confirm nor deny that for you, because that's why I called it Desert Planet. So I know nothing.
Mari, you are correct. That is Tatooine. Yeah. That is Luke Skywalker's house. That is in all of the trilogies now. It's in the prequels. That's weirdly enough, to get into some of the backstory really briefly, Anakin Skywalker and his mom were slaves on Tatooine. Anakin leaves to become a Jedi, and his mom, while he's gone, gets sold to a farmer, a moisture farmer. That's a thing they need on desert planets. And so that place is the moisture farm that she is sold to. She eventually is like taken out of slavery and ends up marrying the guy who bought her, which again, don't need to get into about that whole thing right now. But so that becomes sort of the home of the Skywalkers a little bit, because that's where his mom was, and his aunt and uncle, Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru, end up living there later on. And they are who takes care of Luke when after he is born. Obi-Wan takes Luke as a baby to Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru and leaves him there. So he is raised there until Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru are, let's say, disposed of by the Empire.
So she went back to their home to bury their lightsabers in absence, since both of them have no corpses. They both evaporated, basically. So that's the thing, is her going back to their home to bury their lightsabers.
Yes, okay. And no, because what's weird about it is that it definitely was Luke's home. That is where he grew up.
Ah.
Leia was from a different planet, because in the prequels, when they're born, they decide to separate the kids so that Anakin doesn't know about them and can't track them down. And so Luke is taken to Tatooine to be with his uncle and aunt. And Leia is adopted by Bail Organa, who's a politician on Alderaan, a different planet. He's played by Jimmy Smits. That's not really important. But so Leia is raised as a princess on the planet Alderaan and doesn't know that she's related to Luke and the old ones for a long time. And then her planet gets blowed up real good in A New Hope. And so there's, I guess, on one hand, it does not make sense to bury Leia's lightsaber on Tatooine because, like, that's not her place. But also there isn't anywhere to bury her stuff because her planet is obliterated. So I guess if you're going to bury her next to her brother, that seems better than not. I don't know. It was a weird choice, but I understand it.
It's a choice that clearly mostly exists so that for all of the big significance of Rey declaring herself a Skywalker.
Right? Yes.
That was the moment they were getting to.
Yes. And there's very big like moments in a lot of the films where, I mean, there's one big moment in the original in A New Hope where Luke is deciding what he wants to do with his future. If he wants to go become a Jedi, essentially. And he stands there and stares out at the two suns setting on Tatooine in exactly the same way that Rey is staring out at the suns at the end of this one. So that's mirroring that. And it's also mirrored a bit in The Last Jedi when Luke is dying. He has a similar moment when he's dying where he's looking out and at the sunset and the same song is playing. So it's a good sort of like mirroring of the originals. But yeah, I was also like, oh yeah, they're not going to understand where she is probably.
Good thing I watched the first 20 minutes of that one movie.
Yeah. One last question for both of you, I guess. We touched on it a little bit, but did this inspire you? How are you feeling after this trilogy? Do you want to watch any other Star Warses?
I had this thought when I saw the last trailer for this movie that, like, I definitely don't think that I have defined myself in any way by being this person who hasn't consumed the popular thing. Like, that mostly comes from other people. Like, when you tell them, oh, I haven't seen Star Wars, it's like, oh, God, like, how could you not have seen it? I don't know, man, because I just didn't fucking see those movies. It's fine. But I was like, oh, like, once this movie comes out, then I will have completed this little, you know, podcast specific experiment and, like, I will be able to go watch the other ones. I definitely did make a point of saying that I wasn't going to watch anything else until we finished this trilogy because, I don't know, I was like, I got this far, I might as well. So that seemed worthwhile to me. But now that it's done and I can go watch all the other things, I suspect that I will at some point, but I don't know when. And I don't currently care that much.
I feel like I will too, but it would have to be under like some sort of specific circumstance. Like, I don't know, I couldn't even begin to tell you, like maybe with friends who have also never seen it, or if something new was coming out. I'm not gonna say never, because who knows, there's just a lot of media right now that exists that I am interested in watching. And also this, I feel like this trilogy, for all of the ways that it was similar and different, kind of taught me what Star Wars is and how to consume a Star Wars story. And it is not something, I think that they are very simplistic stories that rely a lot on like the emotional weight of these characters carrying them. And it is very much about a world, as Matt was saying. And so I think that if you are missing the nostalgia piece of the original movies in the Star Wars, you know, series or whatnot, there's really no way to gain that ever. Like, there's no way that I can kind of insert myself into this franchise the way that people who have grown up watching it, you know, experience it. And I think that they only become more dated, and they only become, or, you know, we talked about kind of how you reverse experience things, like the tropes and things that Star Wars started, I have now experienced in other media. So consuming it backwards really changes how I now perceive these tropes and how I receive them. So I'm not in a hurry, because I feel like it's not something that is necessarily calling out to me or pulling me towards it. But I know that there will be some time where it will be my time to finally watch these movies. And I guess, you know, we'll talk about it then. But overall, it was cool to experience these in this moment and kind of see it from in the middle of like people who had the previous baggage and people who were coming to it new, trying to piece it together.
Yeah.
And on that note, thank you to Matt for joining us this week. And thank you all for listening. If you are enjoying this podcast, please consider sharing it with your friends or rating and reviewing it wherever you are listening to this podcast. We'd love to hear all of your thoughts on The Rise of Skywalker. There will be a post dedicated to this episode up on snarksquad.com. You can also find all of us on Twitter at snark_squad. You can find me at My Name is Marines.
I am at Sweeney Says.
And I am at Matthew Gatos.
For when you install Twitter again.
Yeah, if, you know, maybe by the time this comes out and you go to check to see if I'm there, maybe I'll be back. But also, maybe not. Maybe I'll never come back. Find me on Instagram at Matthew Gatos.
This podcast is produced by the Snark Squad and it is edited by Nicole Sweeney. The theme music that is playing us out right now is by Stefan Chin. We will be back in your feed next week.
Bye.
Bye.